SF Signal, episode 84, Horror in Science Fiction and Fantasy. This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And we are once again bagel-free, which means, I mean, if you realize, like a couple episodes back, we talked about, you know, all the futures had no bagels. So all the bad futures. So we're probably going to have a bad future now because there's no bagels here. Right? Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's say hello to all the people that I've got going here tonight. We have a couple of newcomers. I'll introduce them last, and that way that'll make them sweat just a little bit longer. Before we get to them, we'll say hello to Mr. Jeff Patterson.
Hi, Jeff Patterson here. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com.
Next up, Mr. Jay Garman.
I am Jay Garman. I blog a lot of places. The easiest one to find me at is jgarman.net, but if you want the good stuff, go to the geekend at techrepublic.com.
Ooh. Derek Austin Johnson.
Hi, Derek Austin Johnson. I write a monthly film column called Watching the Future at SF Site. I'm also the resident film critic for SF Signal.
And one of our two newcomers this week, say hello to Ashley Crump.
Hi, I'm Ashley Crump. I am nominally the staff of Two Cats. I blog weekly or bi-weekly at Trolls in the Corner, and occasionally I am lucky enough to do a review for SF Signal.
And I'm sure John appreciates that. Next up, our other newcomer, Lee Thomas.
Hi, I'm Lee Thomas. I'm the Bram Stoker Award and Lambda Literary Award-winning author. And you can find me on the web at leethomasauthor.com.
What's it like winning a Bram Stoker Award?
It was pretty cool for my first novel, you know. Something of a surprise.
Yeah? Do they make you come and give a speech and all that kind of good stuff?
They may have. I couldn't actually attend the awards that year. It was the one I'd gone to the awards for a couple of years before, and I went for a couple of years after. But that particular year, I wasn't there, so that was kind of a downer. But
it is. That's a little bit of a Murphy's Law.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the same thing happened with the Lambda. I didn't go to that award ceremony, and I won that one. But I've found since that not going does not guarantee me a win.
Oh, because, yeah, I was just going to suggest, don't go to any more cons.
No. I've been nominated for both of those and some other awards several times, and I've missed many of them, but those were the only two I won. So.
Wow. Well, tonight we are talking about – I've got a theme for the whole month. And obviously Halloween is coming up, so that's sort of my theme for the whole month. I want to talk about other stuff than just straight science fiction or just fantasy. So tonight I want to talk about horror in science fiction and fantasy. So I mean, this is a pretty broad topic. There's lots of things that we can chat about. You know, books, movies, television shows, comic books, everything is on the table. So Lee, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Well, I think the best example, well, at least my favorite example of science fiction and horror blending up would be John Carpenter's The Thing. Mm. I think that is just an intense and brilliant film.
It is. And I mean, that's based on a book.
Short story.
Short story. Okay. And it's been made into a film like three times now.
Yeah, they just did the recent one, which I had not seen. I've not seen the recent remake.
But you like the Carpenter flick the best.
I do, yeah. I mean, it's got the visceral horror, it's got the suspense, the effects are mind-blowing, and the characters. I mean, it was far more believable than, you know, The Thing from Another World, the original filmed version. I could not imagine... The female character was really flat and really wrong, I thought, for that situation. And maybe they've done something different with the female lead in the new one. But it just felt false in the original. Even though I love the original film and there's so much good stuff there, I thought the Carpenter's The Thing was a lot more raw in a lot of ways, a lot more brutal, certainly. And it just had an authenticity to it that I liked.
Well, and who would have thought that the kid that was in all the Disney flicks would grow up to be such a versatile actor.
I know, yeah.
Seriously, Kurt Russell.
Yeah, did great work with Carpenter and obviously many other people, but the stuff he did with Carpenter, I mean, was such a stretch. Snake Plissken and Escape from New York, MacReady and The Thing. I don't remember his character's name from Big Trouble in Little China, where he went, you know, in the comedic direction. But
I was just going to say his best flick ever, Big Trouble in Little China.
And that would be Jack Burton.
Fantasy and horror.
Yeah. Oh, hold on, hold on. What was that, Jay?
The character's name is Jack Burton, owner of the Pork Chop.
That's right.
Jay, why don't you go next? What do you think? Horror and science fiction and fantasy?
You can't. I'm also on board with The Thing, but my apex, at least in film, has always been and always will be Alien. I think that is the definition of the ultimate merging of the two genres. It's got Ridley Scott. It's got H.R. Giger. It's got the character of Ellen Ripley, who was probably the greatest female action protagonist in the history of film. And I will go to the mat for that till the day I die, because I don't see anybody doing another character like that. I don't see Hollywood having the guts to do another character like that in my lifetime. But it just sort of it takes all the classic elements of horror and puts them in a sci-fi frame. This immutable other out there you can't reason with, you can't understand, that is out to prey upon you. It preys upon your ignorance of it. The transgression of your physical self in probably one of the great scenes of all time, which is the chest burster birth, if you will. And it takes tension seriously. The thing about sci-fi horror merging is science fiction makes a real effort to explain how everything works, and horror preys upon the audience not knowing what's happening or why it's happening or how it works. Which is part of the reason I think a lot of the more modern zombie flicks have not worked for me. When you sort of set up how the zombies work and there's rules to them, kind of completely defeats the purpose of zombies, because the whole point of zombies is they just can't exist, and putting rules to them that you can sort of think your way around makes them not an effective sort of zombie antagonist. Mm-hmm. Alien pulls this off. Like, you get enough of it that, okay, this is a viable sort of situation within its own set of conceits, and you still don't think they can win. And that's really, really interesting how they pull that off. And if I'm going to nominate a second film to go with Alien or even The Thing, it would probably be Cronenberg's version of The Fly, which I thought did a really great job of taking the whole Greek tragedy formula of a guy who sort of turns the whole science notion on itself. I figured all this out, and I am now empowered to play God in sort of the Frankenstein mold. And it turns it on the protagonist in a really horrifying way, because there isn't a villain in that movie. The protagonist is the antagonist, which is really, really hard to do. And Cronenberg does it masterfully. And it actually makes Jeff Goldblum's quirkiness into creepiness, which is also not easy to do.
I agree. Ashley.
Yes. When I got the email about fantasy and the horror in science fiction as mixed with Halloween, the first thing that creeped up on me was a short story.
Hold on 1 second. Derek, whatever you're doing, stop.
Sorry about that. Yeah, stopping now.
Go ahead, Ashley.
Okay, sorry. Is Neil Gaiman's short story October in the Chair, because it's very quietly creepy, because you don't realize what's happening. It starts out as fantasy. The months of the year are sitting around a fire telling stories. You know, and it gets these great personifications of each of the months of the year. For instance, April is very flighty. As you go into June gets very warm and just kind of a lays around, kind of the delicate flower type. Well, October, it's October's turn in the chair. And October tells the story of almost a traditional trope of the little boy who goes looking for something. he wants to go out, and it's a dark night, and he goes out and he gets lost. And you're looking for a good ending, and it doesn't happen. He keeps going and going, and he gets more and more lost. And you just know something different's going to happen, and you know you're going to find out what happens with this child at the end. And you don't. And you're going into the dark seasons of the year. And it transforms very slowly without you realizing into this from this mundane little story about the months of the year just sitting around telling tales, into this horror story of a child that disappears and you don't know what happens to him. There are elements of probably what became the Graveyard Book in that, but I thought this was a lot darker than the Graveyard Book.
You know, if you had been telling a ghost story, you could have scared the crap out of all of us. I'm serious. You have a voice that's just perfect for you know, building up that tension and telling that story, and then you could have just got us.
Well, I'll come on another night and I'll tell y'all the story.
You have to, absolutely. Yeah,
totally will.
Gaiman likes to blend a lot of different things together and comes up with some fantastic stories.
He does, and this one just kind of slapped me because it was what I wasn't expecting. I kept waiting and waiting, and it didn't happen. Mm. If it had happened, I probably would have jumped out of my seat. And I kind of regret that I lost the opportunity to make you guys jump out of your seat.
Well, you can do it again another time. Hey, now Jeff wants to tell us about his favorite Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yes. Well, actually, first of all, to counter Ashley's voice, I'm going to give you my list while inhaling helium.
No, you're not.
Everybody talking about the thing that kept going through my mind was the Peter Watts story that came out last year, The Things, which tells the same story from the creature's point of view.
And that was a great story.
Tells us why he's doing it, and the last paragraph of that is probably one of the creepiest things I've read in a while. Hands down for possibly since I tend to like my scares over the top, I think the scariest thing in science fiction that I can think of without applying too much thought to it is the Shrike in Dan Simmons' Hyperion novels,
yeah.
which is everything you'd want from a Cenobite or an alien or any utterly destructive engine of terror. And I think it's used very well. But if I want to say what I think the scariest book is in science fiction, the middle book of Peter Hamilton's Night's Dawn trilogy, primarily when the possessed take Norfolk, is hands down terrifying. It's up there with anything that Clive Barker or Stephen King ever did. It's just such a dismal situation that these people get into. There's horrific scenes throughout that entire trilogy, but that middle book just really pins it as a horror novel. The original Solaris by Stanislaw Lem, the book, has some downright creepy scenes, not to mention the psychological horror of it. Since DiNardo is not here, I will mention S. Andrew Swan's Apotheosis, which has not just the horror of an unstoppable thing which will tear you apart and consume you, but also has the horror of losing one's identity. And one of the things amidst all the space opera and all the action and all the other stuff that those books did so well, the horror of the fear of losing one's identity in the face of this enemy was done so well and was really driven home quite well. Mm. And lastly, I got to mention Doctor Who, especially these last couple seasons. Doctor Who is unique among science fiction shows in my mind in the fact that it manages to get at least one science fiction element into every story. The stories that are told on Doctor Who really cannot be told in any other genre because the plot will always hinge on something science fictional, whether it be the alien origin of the threat or whether it be the solution, etc. And the fact that he has had so many truly terrifying enemies, especially since Russell Davies brought the show back. I mean, we can talk about Blink, we can talk about the Silence, we can talk about there was the one about where the God Complex that was on a couple of weeks ago, which was also about identity and trying to hang on to one's faith and stuff like that. That had some truly scary stuff, even though it was trying to ape The Shining a little bit. But that's a show that when it first restarted on BBC, they actually had a page on the BBC website where kids watched the show with their parents, and it gave you a scene-by-scene breakdown of how scary each scene was to the yep. kids who were watching it, so the parents would have some idea how much they'd have to show them up during the episode.
Rory, put Hitler in the cupboard. Best line ever.
No, I think mine is, we should have lunch sometime and get married.
So, Derek.
Yeah, well, you know, I tend to take Jay's statement that science fiction and horror, in a way, are kind of mutually exclusive because horror deals with stuff you can't know, and science fiction is all about sort of deconstructing the mystery. Now, having said that, one of the ones I have to mention is the one novel that Brian Aldiss calls the father or mother of all science fiction novels, which is Frankenstein. This is, it's really kind of the urtext of horror and science fiction for that matter. And really when you're talking about science fiction and horror, with one or two very minor exceptions, and in some cases major exceptions, it all sort of dates back to that particular novel. You know, when you have the mad scientist robbing bodies, for parts. When he finally gives when Victor Frankenstein finally gives his creature the juice of life or the jolt of life, and is so disgusted by what he's created that he casts it out. Don't get me wrong. The novel is probably the most horridly written of the Holy Trinity of horror novels, but on the other hand, it's probably the most fascinating, at least in terms of science fiction and horror. And you can see traces of that right up through Greg Bear's Blood Music, which has a lot of very similar themes. Matter of fact, Blood Music, if you read the short story,
yeah,
actually reads, it's a horror story for the most part. And then once you read the novel, and it really sort of extrapolates everything that that transpires after these cellular intelligences have taken over, and it's really kind of transformative as a consequence. Another novel that I think is particularly horrific is K.W. Jeter's Dr. Adder, which is a beautifully grim book. It's one of the most perverse things you're ever going to read, and it's also got grotesqueries that, quite frankly, I don't think Clive Barker has ever been able to match.
I always go back to the stuff that I am familiar with, which is television and movies, and because, like I say, you know, I used to think I was well read, and then I met Karen Burnham.
that needs to be a T-shirt, by the way.
Yeah, I'm gonna get that as a T-shirt. I swear to God. I go to a classic. You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sight, a dimension of sound, a dimension of mind. You're moving through a place of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone. Doom, 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 doom.
I'm gonna disagree with you there a little bit. Horror certainly...
How dare you!
Horror was definitely one of the subgenres that show tackled. But if you look at the series as a whole, even if you drop the hour-long episodes and just stick with the half-hour ones, horror played a very small part in there. There was a lot of suspense.
Yeah.
But actual horror, it only really rears its head full bore in maybe three or four episodes. It definitely plays underneath in quite a few. But it I wouldn't go so far as to call it a horror show.
Okay. Well, we can agree to disagree to agree that you're wrong. What about like Tales from the Dark Side?
There were some science fiction episodes of Tales from the Dark Side that I would thoroughly agree with you on. I'd say a lot of shows that blatantly tried to be horror shows did manage to do some science fiction episodes. And I'll actually go so far as to say that when they brought Twilight Zone back, there was probably more outright horror on a regular basis. But even then, it still wasn't a true, you know, it wasn't the core of the show. Suspense was.
But by the way, if you search Wikipedia for science fiction horror, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth listing is Lee Thomas.
Wow. Oh, cool.
I don't really know that I've done anything in the science fiction vein, but
I just thought that was kind of
testify. Keep talking about it.
I mean, the X Files. We can drive it to number two if we all believe.
Yes, the X Files, absolutely.
It started as sort of a monster of the week kind of show. I mean, even though they had this science fiction undercurrent, and then it made that major switch to where everything was because of the grand plot. And whatnot. And
well, the aliens
always
had
early shows. Some of those early shows were the creepiest things that have ever been on TV. I mean, they did some amazing things there.
Oh, I have said to this day that the episode with the inbreeding family is still the creepiest thing I have ever, ever, ever seen on television, and I cannot watch it to this day.
Yeah.
I saw it one time, and that's it.
I don't remember the exact thing, but the guy that was crawling through the vents, and there were a couple of shots of this guy. I don't remember exactly what the thing was, but he could morph his body and slide through vents and whatnot. That creeped me out for a long time.
I'm interested that so many answers to this question have been about films and television. We really only had a couple of stories or books mentioned.
Well, there are a number of them. I mean, you know, you can go back to Lovecraft's The Color Out of Space, which brings in elements of both. Matheson's I Am Legend basically took the vampire story and added a science fiction twist to it, in that I don't know that too many people have looked at it as a virus before, as a problem that might be able to be solved through science. You know, the history is certainly there. It's just
It also depends on what kind of, you know, horror we're talking about. I mean, you can, like, a book like Ted Reynolds' Tides of God, which was a truly horrifying book to me, the whole idea of reason vanishing from the planet and stuff like that, and even, like, the Fated Son books had some pretty die-hard horrific scenes in them.
You also had something like most of the works of Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
Like Faith of Our Fathers or Little Something for Us Tempunauts, where you had basically existential horror on a in some cases a very cosmic scale.
Mm-hmm. And you can look at the origin of the apocalyptic tale, which is so popular now. I mean, if you go back to Mary Shelley's The Last Man, again, you're looking at something that has more of a science fiction feel to it, and Apocalypse was very much in the hands of the science fiction writers. I mean, Day of the Triffids, Earth Abides, several of these, On the Beach even. You know, there were these apocalyptic stories, but genuinely horrific as well. Now, when apocalyptic story sort of defaults to the zombies.
Lee, I think your cell phone is going in and out a little bit. I wanted to throw out there, some more films, because that's where I come from. But Matrix 2 and Matrix 3 were horrible. I don't know if that counts. Predator.
Predator.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one. That is very clearly an action flick. Far more than a horror flick. And that's the same reason I say Alien singular is sci-fi horror and Aliens plural is action sci-fi. There are, you know, big scary things to fight, and there's some tension, but as strange as it may seem, there's not a whole lot of stylistic or content difference between Predator and Die Hard. It's basically tension and action. I would not call those.
You all right, Derek? Are you all right?
Yeah, no, it's all good. They're just raiding the crack house next door. It's pay no mind.
You hope.
It's an October tradition, man. It's all cool.
See, I would go back to the mention of On the Beach, because I think that's where sort of science fiction horror deviates and finds its real feet, because that's a case where science does know what's happening but has arrived at the conclusion that you're hosed.
If you want to talk movies, there's another one that Hammer did called These Are the Damned.
Ooh,
that I'm sorry?
I forgot about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically you have these kids that have been exposed to radiation, and the scientists have conducted or are conducting research on them. It's, you know, they know what's going on, but it's absolutely terrifying.
Hey, Patrick, I'd like to throw in the fact that the quality and the visceralness of the horror is the only reason to watch the movie Life Force. I can think of no other reason to watch that movie aside from how good the horror is.
I remember Life Force. That was a good movie. I actually liked that movie. I liked that one and Night of the Comet.
It's underrated.
I love Night of the Comet.
Deep Star
6. I would like to point out one more great story that I don't think we've mentioned. Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Ooh, yeah.
Which is absolutely brilliant in most of its incarnations. And just, again, the idea that we lose control, we lose identity, that, you know, it's insidious, it's not an obvious sort of thing. Really great story and scary. I'll get out.
You know, I wanted to mention Pitch Black, but we also mentioned that in the Sci-Fi Films podcast, and I'm worried that we should just leave that in the past along with Vin Diesel's movie career.
Works for me.
Ashley.
Yes?
You mentioned the Graveyard Book.
I did.
Gaiman kind of mixes a little bit of horror into his stuff. You know, there's always, like, the scary stuff going on in there. Can you think of anybody else who's worked that in the way he has?
I don't know that there are many people who have worked it in as successfully. I think he manages to work it in such a way that it presents itself as an element of our everyday life. You know, we read these things, we have these terrifying people that turn up. You know, one day this woman is a woman, the next day she's a werewolf. And while some people might argue that's not much of a change,
Send
your letters to Ashley Crump.
John DiNardo at SF.
Yeah, you know, I had to get it in. Sorry about that. But you were thinking it. You know you were. But anyway, I don't know that many people managed to make it seem so almost unexceptional.
So, you know, it's just there.
It's just there.
Well, the same could be said about a lot of Harlan Ellison stuff as well.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream certainly sort of falls into the same thing where it's almost a precursor to the new weird in the fact that the horror, the otherness, the alienness is actually just the window dressing where these people have to survive and deal with all the threats that come at them. The actual setting itself is, by its nature, horrific.
Yeah.
Well, but that again, I wonder how we've gone this far on the podcast and not mentioned Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because that's basically that series' whole shtick.
Yeah, hush.
Exactly.
Hush was a great episode. What were you going to say, Ashley?
I was just going to say something about the fact, following on the new weird line, that, you know, people like China Mieville have taken that to a whole new level where the weird and the horrific are the normal. And, you know, I'm feeling a little bit at sea here because, you know, like here, I used to think I was well-read until I met Karen Burnham. I'm thinking I used to think I was well-read until I, you know, came to play on the podcast. But things like Perdido Street Station and The Scar are filled with these just horrifying figures. Mm-hmm. And they're just a matter of course. You know, people with three arms, people who have the front part of the body of a regular person, and the rest of them is a mechanical cart. And, you know, while the rest of us might be horrified by that, the rest of these characters are having a conversation about their day.
You see it a lot. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just wondering, you know, when does the ordinary become the horror?
Now, you know? I get what you're saying. Absolutely. I got my little list here that I keep going back to. And you mentioned Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And I would argue that no one has really made a decent Frankenstein movie. They've gotten some good Frankenstein movies, but there hasn't been decent. But on the even further opposite end of the spectrum from Frankenstein would be Reanimator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
is Lovecraft, but, you know, as opposed to Shelley.
But, I mean, it was a great movie.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Altered States.
It added camp to the just visceral horror and had the sci-fi elements. I mean, From Beyond, from the same group, also loosely based on a Lovecraft story, has very similar elements.
Yeah.
And I think both films worked very well as absolutely over the top horror flicks with the science fiction underpinning.
Yep. So we better start wrapping this up because we're running out of time. Derek, why don't you give us your final thoughts on science fiction in horror and fantasy?
Well, yeah, I didn't even touch fantasy. Just that it's amazing to me that a set of aesthetics that are supposed to be diametrically opposed dovetail more often than not. I mentioned, you know, like I said, I mentioned Frankenstein, I mentioned Dr. Adder. We can talk about the works of Jeff Vandermeer as well, who blends it all pretty seamlessly.
Mm-hmm. Jeff?
Thought that kept going through my head was when Alien came out, as was the case with a lot of movies and books that got popular around that time, there was a whole host of ripoffs that came after it. I'm not going to talk about the movies, but there were quite a few books that came out in the early 80s that were all abandoned space stations and haunted spaceships and stuff like that, that really said, hey, we can, you know, do horror in space. And it really became almost a dominant trope of the form for about 3 years. And if you look back to that period, there were quite a few successful attempts.
And then there was, of course, when they, you know, the alien eggs, when they actually brought the eggs to Earth, you had Critters. Ashley.
As far as fantasy and horror and science fiction, I am left wondering who makes the rules. I mean, I know that it's a constantly evolving set of tropes and ideas, but where are we going? I mean, and listen to me devolving into book titles, but where are we going? Where have we been?
I prefer, where do we go from here?
Sing to me.
Ashley, don't. You don't know what you're doing. Talk about horror.
Sorry, guys. I'm new here. Won't do it again.
Don't let them sing.
I died so many years
ago. It will bring the end times.
Jay, what are your final thoughts?
I think that genre dovetailing is the way of the future, if for no other reason than booksellers or movie marketers like being able to tick off multiple boxes and market in multiple ways. So the market is going to demand we get more of these, and that's for good or ill. I'm waiting for the next Alien, but the fact that there is a Star Wars zombie novel called Death Troopers, I think it is a forewarning omen about.
We chatted with that guy, with the author of that, over on Functional Nerds.
It's an interesting concept that it ranks up there with like the Star Trek X-Men crossover. It's like,
it's a Star Trek Legion of Superheroes coming out.
I had purged that crap from my brain and you brought it back.
Of course. Yeah. Your boy, Chris Roberson's writing the Legion of Superheroes Star Trek crossover that's coming out this month.
Wolverine was on the bridge of the Enterprise. I remember that now. Crap.
To Dr. McCoy's, well, man.
And now I have given you my own little gift of horror that will haunt you.
Hey, I have a great idea. Let's give the Star Trek franchise back to Marvel. No! Lee, final thoughts.
Oh, final thoughts. I think when it comes to horror and fantasy, I think Clive Barker set very good groundwork for that with Weird World and several of the novels that followed. It was a very nice blend of the two forms. But overall, this idea of dovetailing, it actually makes perfect sense to me. When dealing with speculative lit, we're talking about this sort of feeling of wonder. And whether it's science fiction, fantasy, or horror, the strong feeling of wonder sort of permeates all of them. So I think they go together very well. And I do hope we see some great cross-genre pieces coming down the road.
You know, as I'm still stuck on the crossovers. I mean, that was terrible. It was so terrible.
What's that?
What? The crossover. I'm sorry. I got stuck on the crossover there for a second. You know, you are correct with your fantasy. He did a lot of great stuff. And we need to talk about dark fantasy, and maybe that'll be another one of our topics for this month, is to talk a little bit about the dark fantasy. But I think, you know, for this podcast, we have to definitely acknowledge the Toxic Avenger as the quintessential sci-fi horror flick of all time.
Sci-fi horror superhero flick.
Yeah. I mean, it covered everything.
Comedy.
Absolutely.
What about
sci-fi horror superhero comedy?
There's something for everybody.
And you know, just to go back on the whole crossover thing for a minute, that was a terrible crossover. Marvel had a terrible, and you know, Marvel decided also to cross over the fantastic comic book written by Larry Hama of G.I. Joe with the fantastic comic book. The Transformers, which were completely different from the animated shows, and were just great books, and they decided to cross them over into this limited edition series, and Larry Hama was like, you know, screw you, that's not affecting my book. You're creating your own little micro universe where that happens, and it's not touching my book. And it was like, good for him, you know? I think that's one of the few times when an author of a comic book has been able to do that. We all feel for JMS right now. Anyway, so that little tangent, you know, I'm done. I'm off that tangent. Thanks to everybody for coming on. This was science fiction and horror and fantasy. Everybody should go check out all the books that we listed. Check out all the movies that we talked about in the TV shows. Order in some pizza. You know, just have a weekend where you watch or read all of this stuff. You should just take one, right? One weekend. No.
Depends on whether you intend to sleep.
But whatever you do, don't bring bagels into your home.
That way lies madness.
I think we're done. I think we have descended into madness and horror. So thanks, everybody. And we'll call that an end to the podcast.
Thank you.
How's that sound?
Thank you.
Visit sfsignal.com each and every day for all your speculative news needs. John D. is the resident blogger and editor over there, and all of our irregulars contribute articles each and every day. So there's always something up there, from tidbits to reviews to things on movies, you name it, it's on there each and every day, sfsignal.com. Follow John D. on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal for tweets that lead you back to sfsignal.com and other sites. He tweets a lot of things from a lot of different people, so follow him on Twitter, and you'll never be without science fiction news. If you're looking for me online, that's easy. I'm all things from my brain, ATFMB, twitter.com/ATFMB, ATFMB.com, and facebook.com/ATFMB. You can see the pattern. I also blog occasionally over at sfsignal.com, and of course, we have this podcast twice a week. If you enjoy this podcast or any of our podcasts, there's a few things you can do to help us out. Number one, you can go to iTunes and subscribe. That does help us because it boosts our ranking inside of iTunes and helps, you know, get us up a little bit higher when people are doing searches. Same thing if you give us a couple stars or write us a review. These things all help us inside of iTunes. Outside of iTunes, just tell your friends. Tell them to go to sfsignal.com, check out the podcast, and that will help us as well. That's it for me. I am out of here. Tune in every Monday for another panel and every Thursday for another interview. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.